Hello, hello, and welcome to America Trends. Glad to have you along here on the YouTube America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. I'm Amy Fuller. Going to start with some of the trending political news of the day. President Trump is doubling down on his plan to get more border wall funding. The White House just released its budget proposal for the next fiscal year. Trump is looking for more than $8 billion in additional wall funding, border security and all that. And the Senate, by the way, is set to vote this week on a resolution blocking his emergency declaration that we've been hearing so much about. And you see right there President Trump's border priority, his budget priorities, curb spending, border security, national defense, combating the opioid epidemic. It's all related to that stuff. President Trump also addressed all this in a 12. There's Ilhan Omar putting her a few cents in. Negative few cents, of course, but there you go. A little bit of both sides. President Trump addressed this whole thing in a tweet today, too. He said Republican senators have a very easy vote this week. It's about border security and the wall, not constitutionality and precedent. It's an 80% positive issue. So all these things. Democrats are 100% united as usual on a 20% issue. President Trump with his tweets. Get tough, ours. I'm sure he means Republicans there, so we'll see. Sarah Sanders also making some news, press secretary to the White House, of course. She gave her first press conference in about 6 weeks and addressed all of this.
President Trump's 2020 budget, which was released today, builds upon incredible success and keeps his promises to the American people. It continues the president's pro-job creation policies, keeps taxes low, combats the opioid epidemic, protects our veterans, defends our nation, and secures our borders. Even with a strong economy, deficits are still a threat, and this budget demonstrates the president's vision to restrain Washington spending and reach a balanced budget by 2034. This is a clear roadmap for a more fiscally responsible future if Congress chooses to follow it.
Sarah Sanders speaking from the White House, and there were more comments about it. And so all these politically trending things we are going to chat about with our friend, Senator Ted Harvey of Colorado. He is the chairman and founder of the Committee to Defend the President. This started as an anti-Hillary PAC. Then it turned into a pro-Trump PAC because he just felt like Trump needed some backup there. So we're going to talk about the political headlines with him. He's fresh off CPAC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez making headlines. The Democrats, you know, trying like mad to get this anti-hate resolution that took 48 hours to build last week after Ilhan Omar's anti-Semitic comments yet again. So all of these things. Also, entertainment, a new movie about legendary dancer choreographer Bob Fosse and his leading lady, Gwen Verdon. It is coming out. It's actually a series, limited series, I think on FX. And we're going to have a little preview for you. You know, they were around back like 60s and 70s. And so much of what you see on Broadway today was built on what they came up with and some of their breakthroughs in the medium. So that. Plus, we are going to talk about Generation Z being more depressed. Despite a drop in substance abuse, apparently they're more depressed than previous generations. And also talking to Kristen Sunana Walker of the Mental Health News Radio Network about art therapy, helping teens at risk of depression. So we will see her in just a few minutes, talk about all those things. But first, we here at America Trends and U2 America want to send our condolences to the family of Jeff Lyle. He's a man who helped us do all that we do here in getting this show on for you. He was managing partner of a group called Media Gateway, a Little Rock broadcast and master control service outsourcer for TV stations around the country. And we have some remembrances on Facebook already. There's a picture of Jeff. He suffered a stroke last week, passed away over the weekend. Jeff Lyle was a leader, mentor, and friend to staff, colleagues, and associates, as well as a pioneer in technical TV matters. And he will be deeply missed. Give me your attention, baby. Woo, talking about depression today. Get excited, right? You know, we're deep in the, well, we're a few days from spring, but still, without the sun, it sort of all weighs on you, doesn't it? We're talking to Kristen Sunana Walker today of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Just a few specific headlines, too. Apparently, Generation Z is more depressed despite a drop in substance use than other generations. So that's sort of a headline. And then also how art therapy is helping teens at risk of depression. Seasonal affect disorder, we can get into that if we need to. Hey, Kristen, welcome back.
Hi, Amy. Glad to be back.
How are we doing after the time change?
I'm still adjusting.
Isn't it so strange that one little hour? I mean, we know it's coming. We can plan for it. But see, that's another part of it. This is going to give us, what, an extra hour of daylight at the end of the day. So, you know, that vitamin D and that sunlight always sort of helps our mood, right?
It absolutely does. And it also, for us early risers, it's a little bit hard because you wake up and you're like, wait a minute, where's the sun? Oh, that's right. That's right. It's coming an hour later.
You know, Kristen, I love you to death, but they talk about the political divide and things like that. Faiths, you early morning people, I don't understand you. You're not one of me. I don't get it. But I salute you. So why is it that we can't adjust so quickly just after even 1 hour of change? It's daylight savings time now that we've sprung forward.
Yeah, I think, you know, change is difficult. And I think even more so with this fast paced way that we live our lives, any little ripple, we're already stressed to the max. And that little ripple, it feels like an ocean and not just a ripple. So I think that's part of it.
I don't feel a thing so far, but okay. I mean, the cloudy weather, even here in San Diego right now, it's sort of strange, but nothing compared to what some people are getting in parts of the country. So on the issue of depression, what is this thing about Generation Z being more depressed? And first of all, Kristen, just what is Generation Z? How old are they?
Generation Z are your teenagers right now.
Got it.
So, yeah, they're doing so many studies and the differences between millennials, which is around my son's age, he's in his late 20s, to Gen Z. And the talk about it is that, you know, the millennials dealt with social media, but they dealt with it. They weren't born, you know, coming out of the womb with a smartphone in their hand. And Gen Z has a very different experience. So the link that they're talking about in so many studies is that fact that they actually are born right into, hey, you're 2 years old. Here's an iPad. Oh.
So what does that do to them?
Well, you know, they're showing that it's changing the way kids' brains are forming. Certain areas of the brain are lighting up in places that they haven't in other generations. It's doing a lot of good in some ways, but it's also causing that lack of connectedness to another human being. And that's the biggest problem that researchers are seeing when it comes to Gen Z.
Huh. Specific places not lighting up or lighting up. Do you have any specifics there? Because I just find that so interesting. The brain is just an amazing thing. And the fact that we can sort of look and see what's going on, it's just amazing. It's phenomenal.
Well, think about all the time that you're spending looking at a screen and you're looking at a screen in your hand. So all that area, you know, at the front of your skull, that area of the brain, that's lit up in places that just haven't been in the past, and it's all due to that screen time.
Well, that is a precautionary tale, though. I mean, my next question, of course, is what can parents do? What should we do? But are we just here to stay? Because how are we going to get those phones away, those devices away from the kids?
Well, you know, it's that same old adage of, you know, you have the control, you're the parent, so you can limit how much access your kids have to devices. The problem isn't so much that you can't take them away from your kids. You absolutely can. The problem is that they're being used as a babysitter, much like television has been in the past. So making sure that you don't use it as a babysitter is a really, really good idea.
It's sort of funny because in generations past, we have heard about the perils of letting the TV raise your kids. And right. You say, well, that sounds so antiquated now. But truly, people didn't read as much. People like when I was born, when you were born, I was raised in the 70s. We didn't read as much and have family time and, you know, back in the day, music around the piano, hanging around reading the Bible together. We really were raised on that TV. So you do wonder how it could have been different if it weren't so.
Absolutely. And think about, you know, even though being raised on TV, which I was too, the TV didn't follow me into the bathroom.
And right, with like your phone does now. Sure.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting. Well, the thing about this headline too is that they're more depressed despite a drop in substance use and I guess or abuse. So that's one good part of the tale, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that researchers are really finding fascinating is that, you know, while we're not seeing as much of a run to substance use, it's still there, obviously. It shows how much that addiction is, that part of addiction is replaced with this new addiction, which is staring at your phone, staring at a computer screen. It's turned into an addiction. So we may see lesser use of other substances that you ingest or smoke or inhale, things like that, but you aren't changing it to, you know, to something new and better. You're just switching addictions.
And Facebook and Twitter and all of the rest of those platforms are so good at, you know, Kristen, anyone on those platforms knows that you can just scroll forever. I remember showing a friend once a couple years back what Facebook was like, and he said he was scrolling on the wall, and he said, does this thing ever end? And I said, no, it doesn't.
No.
It never ends. So I mean, that is a big proponent of it. Okay, so, I guess then we're just going to have to try to, you know, I don't know, would a parent try to have the parents take the stuff away from them? And what if they're a teenager now? How do you sort of work that out of their hands in a progressive way where it's not cold turkey and where they won't run away and never speak to you again?
Right. Well, there's a lot of rituals like, okay, phones go in the basket before we sit down at the dinner table. Phones are not allowed at the dinner table. Parents, too. Don't sit there with your phone on the dinner table turned upside down so you don't see the screen, but it's still sitting there, and then tell your kids they can't have their phones there either. So it's a lot of that. It's a lot of applications that you can install that say, hey, you've been on Facebook or Snapchat or whatever for this many minutes. It's time to shut it down. So it's a lot of safeguards that can be put in by parents for their kids and themselves.
Yes, we really do need to think hard about our use in front of our kids, too, because we are just as guilty. Going to bring Kristen back and talk about how art therapy is helping teens at risk of depression. And they might be laughing it up, but comedians struggle with suicidal thoughts more than other entertainers? We'll take a look when we come back. We're going to be talking about the trending political topics of the day with Senator Ted Harvey ahead. The Committee to Defend the President is his mantle. It's a pro-Trump PAC, the largest one in America. And you can find them at committeetodefendthepresident.com. We're going to talk about Trump doubling down and for his new bill that he's got coming out for the fiscal year, his new budget, I should say. He is doubling down and saying we must have this $8 billion for border security. Also, some other things like Democrats passing bills, H.R. 1, making it easier for illegals to vote, cancel the voice of legal voters. What's that about? Also, the administration says some 180,000 migrant families, 180,000 migrants traveling as families are expected to cross into our border in the month of May. So in recent weeks, we've been hearing Border Patrol saying that they are just crushed to the max, and it's only getting worse, the projections. So we'll chat about all these things coming up. Right now, though, we are talking about some things with Kristen Sinatra Walker of the Mental Health News Radio Network. She has been working in the healthcare field for more than two decades, has interviewed leaders in behavioral health community like CEOs of tech companies, counselors, best-selling authors, all these people with takes, global experts in the field of behavioral health. And her show is downloaded in over 170 countries and it continues its reach with inspiring guests and a lot of hosts that you want to check around and see. And Kristen, we talked in the previous segment about Generation Z being more depressed despite a drop in substance use than other generations, a little bit about seasonal affect disorder. Before we talk about art therapy, helping teens at risk of depression. What can we do about seasonal affective disorder? Do those lamps really help? Do we pop some vitamin D or, and hope for the best?
Well, definitely vitamin D helps. And also those happy lamps, they actually do, or happy lights, they actually are have been proven to work. So if you ever go to Alaska and you're there for a long winter, which I don't recommend if you're not used to that kind of weather, you're going to see a lot of those happy lights shining through windows.
So art therapy helping teens at risk of depression. So tell us about this.
Well, what's great, there's actually something that's called Stendhal syndrome, which is came up with by a French artist, and it's when you just become so enraptured and in ecstasy looking at art that you start to feel dizzy and faint. And I experienced that a little bit when I was in Florence, Italy. And the idea behind that is, instead of doing this with a phone, you're doing this and you're painting and you're drawing and you have physical action going on behind an activity that gives you much joy. And that the physicality of that, the emotion that brings out is very different than what you get when you're looking at a phone or a computer screen. So that is why I'm using art therapy to help kids get their emotions out. And it helps them with becoming more social and have an appreciation for the beauty of life. That is why art therapy, one of the reasons anyway, why it's been so beneficial for teens and for adults.
Sort of like being in the zone.
Absolutely.
What's the syndrome called?
Stendhal syndrome.
Can you spell it?
Sure. It's Stendhal.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so and it must be proving to help, and I'll bet it's a whole different ball game from just, you know, pushing buttons on your phone. There's a lot of rate of return on creativity and gratification when you create something that's not just typed words, I think.
Absolutely. Now, you can be creative with a computer too, but something about getting your hands dirty mixed with clay and paint and drawing, and those are tangible physical items that you're, or actions that you're taking, and watching art be created in front of you, which is very different from doing that on a computer.
Instagram filters can go only so far.
That's right.
So if my kid's not being offered this at school, is there any place I can look?
Oh, there's so many after-school programs. I mean, the Boys and Girls Club is a great place always. Those are wonderful places to go. I know we still have, our Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts of America. Just any kind of after-school program that you can go to is going to have an art therapy component. At least most of them do. So those are the first places that I would look.
Great advice, Kristen. Thank you so much. Oh, that's pretty. I could just sit here and look at some of the works of art they're bringing up in the control room. Nice.
Be careful of the syndrome, Amy.
I don't know what it is, but I like it. One of those non-art people that tries to describe. Never mind. Kristen, we're also talking about why comedians are so, they seem to be the ones who struggle with suicidal thoughts and suicide itself more than other entertainers, let alone most people. And we're going to play a bit of sound right now. I want to tell you, it's I thought about you because I knew we were talking about this topic. And there's a new trailer out for this great series that's coming out on Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon, these two iconic Broadway people from the 60s and 70s and beyond. And in the trailer, There's this quote from Fosse that talks about how art can hide or deflect or revise the pain an artist is feeling. And so I thought it'd be interesting to play it for you before we talked about this. So let's go ahead and listen.
That's what we do, though, isn't it? We take what hurts and we turn it into a big gag. And we're singing and we're dancing. And the audience, they're yucking it up. They're laughing so hard. They don't realize that all they're laughing at is a person in agony. A person who's peeled off his own skin.
Where's that smile, Bobby?
It's what artists do, I suppose. Kristen Sinana Walker. And I know you brought this up because even recent, we talk about this pretty often because you have more instances, and someone named Brody Stevens, a well-known U.S. comedian, took his own life a few days back.
Right, exactly. And he was known, and you can read about it, as bringing joy and light to, every movie set he was a part of or every creative endeavor he was a part of. And who does that remind you of? Robin Williams brought so much to people around him. And yet this is someone that was in severe emotional pain and utilized you know, his emotional pain to bring joy to others, but wasn't really able to bring that joy back to himself. And that's why we need to look at this. I mean, comedy and laughter are so close to tears. You've read that in so many places.
Sure.
It's so very true.
And there he was that Zach Galifianakis he was with?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
And he was in The Hangover and some things like that. And you know, Kristen, it reminds me, over the weekend I was on social media and someone posted a montage of probably 20, 30 comedians who have died, actors, and it said, and they're all laughing. It had, you know, had a great laughing picture of their face, this montage, and it said, this is what depression looks like.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking. We just don't know what people are going through. So you have given your time to volunteer at suicide hotlines. What can you tell us?
I'd say listening and without judgment. Not always, we want to fill the void with words. And sometimes you just need to let there be a void and just be there with someone. I've gone so many times to someone's house who I know was struggling and I just did their dishes or I just sat with them. I didn't force them to speak if they couldn't. And if they wanted to talk, let them talk. And try to, you know, find a comfortable place where they can get some regular ongoing help. But I think the downfall we see with people is we rush to judge and then we try to fill a void of silence with all the shoulds that they should be doing. And that's the last thing someone who is feeling like that needs to hear is what they should be doing. They already feel burdened to the max.
Hate to put you on the spot. 15 seconds. What do you tell someone who might be suffering in their mind?
Get some help, call a friend, call one of the suicide hotlines. It's so difficult to punch those numbers in, but I'm telling you, the people that answer those phones are magical, incredible, empathetic people.
Said with love from Kristen Sinatra Walker. Thank you so much, Kristen. President Trump is pushing even more to get border funding because he wants to just make our country secure. Go figure. We are so proud to welcome Senator Ted Harvey of Colorado. He is with the Committee to Defend the President, this pro-Trump PAC, biggest one in America. And yeah, the White House just released its budget proposal for the next fiscal year, and he wants $8 billion in additional wall funding. And meanwhile, Ted, the Senate is set to vote this week on that resolution blocking his emergency declaration. What's going to come of that?
Well, I think the Democrats will have the support of a handful of Republicans in the Senate the way they did in the House, and they will get it passed, unfortunately. And it will go to the president, and he'll veto it. And they won't have the votes to override the president's veto on this. It's very disappointing for me, especially to see Rand Paul, one of my heroes, being one of the Republicans not supporting the president on this issue. And he's arguing that it's giving too much authority to the executive branch and going around the Constitution. But everybody needs to remember that this power was given to the president by the legislative branch. They did it back in 1976 for just a reason like this, to give the executive branch the authority in a case of an emergency to have the executive branch be able to protect the American citizens. And if ever there was a reason for this measure, it is right now when you have millions of illegal immigrants literally coming across our border and we have no idea who they are. This is an invasion, like the president said, and this is a national emergency. So I think Rand Paul is wrong. I think the other Republicans are wrong. And I think it will not bode well for those Republicans that vote against the president on this issue.
I mean, he is the executive branch. We all remember President Obama boasting about he has his pen, so Congress can do what they want or what they don't want.
Especially when it is dealing with the commander-in-chief protecting our borders
right.
from a foreign invader, and that's what this is all about. Whether the Democrats want to admit it or not, that's what this is. And the president, regardless of which party it is, has an obligation to protect the American people. But unfortunately, we've had 30 years of presidents doing nothing about it, and finally we have a president that got elected on this issue, that he will protect the American people from a foreign invasion. And those Republicans and Democrats are going to rue the day that they vote against the president on this issue, because they're not voting against the president, they're voting against the American people.
You're exactly right. They need to realize they're our representatives, not our leaders. But what the
That's
Democrats
exactly
will
right.
say, what the Democrats will say is this: even though we have some 30 or so national or emergency orders enacted since, what, the 70s. They will say this one that President Trump is trying to declare takes money and moves it around. It appropriates, and Congress is supposed to appropriate. So that's what they say their big problem is. So my question is, how do you answer that? And plus, it doesn't every executive order have to move around some money? So you can't just, the government doesn't just work in a vacuum without any money at all.
Well, this money has been appropriated. 99% of this money has been appropriated for the Defense Department, for national defense. And if this is not the defense of our country, then I don't know what is. And, right. and yes, you are moving the money around, but he is the commander in chief. This is the money that is given to the Defense Department. He is using it for the defense of our country. And in a state of emergency, we should have the executive branch have the authority to do this without having the legislative branch fighting back as much as they are.
Can't say it any more plainly than that, Senator Harvey. And you know, just some of the numbers. There, Border Patrol just saying in recent weeks, we are crushed to the max. We can't do this. And now new projections coming from the administration that some 180,000 migrants coming as family units are expected to come in the month of May. These are the projections. We're already getting so many of those. This isn't just 180,000 just going to pop in May. This is on top of the other hundreds of thousands that have been coming
right.
in recent months. So
right. and
the
and
numbers
what is
are
the
there.
Definition of a family unit. I'm not sure I agree with what that definition is.
Right. This,
what it means is somebody coming across the border with a minor. And what we have seen so many times in the past is that you have coyotes bringing across minors
pimps. You got
because
pimps,
they
Senator
know
Harvey.
That they can get across.
Mm-hmm. They say family units, but it could be a guy and a kid and coyotes, pimps, whatever. The sex
That's
and
right.
human trafficking.
Human trafficking.
There's a huge reality there.
That's right.
Okay, so all of that. So to be continued, we'll see how they vote this week. And meanwhile, what's going on with Manafort?
Well, as you know, the Mueller team came forward and wanted to have 25 years imprisonment for a guy who's 70 years old who committed crime 25 years ago. And that's all they have is crimes that were done decades ago, had nothing to do with the Trump administration, with the Trump campaign, had nothing to do with collusion with Russia, had nothing to do with obstruction of justice. They just went after him on these crimes because he was a friend of Trump's, and they were trying to twist his arm so that he would come out against the president on something and give up some evidence. But reality is there is no evidence. There was no collusion. There was no obstruction of justice. And Manafort is just a bump in the road on Mueller's witch hunt to try to go after the president. Not to say that this should be excused, what he did, because I've never been a huge fan of his anyways, because he always looked like he was doing this kind of on the edge kind of dealings, but has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign. And this is all we've got after 2.5 years of investigation by the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, as Trump the candidate, and now Trump the president. All they've got is a 70-year-old man who broke the law a couple decades ago.
So 2.5 years of investigating. How much money has been spent?
Tens of millions of dollars.
I mean, and how much Russian collusion have they proven?
I think they've proven a lot with regards to Russia collusion between Hillary Clinton, the FBI, the Clinton Foundation, the CIA, the NSA, colluding with the Russians to fabricate a justification for why they should investigate the Trump campaign during a national election, but also how they colluded together to try to bring down this president. I believe what we're seeing unfolding right now with all of the evidence that's being released over the last couple of weeks is evidence to the greatest scandal ever in American history. And I think the American people should be outraged over what happened, regardless of whether it's Trump or whether it was candidate Clinton or whether it was any presidential candidate. Any civil libertarian out there should be outraged by what their government did to the Republican nominee for president of the United States in the last election cycle.
What do we do with that rage and our demand to say, okay, what have you done with this money? What have you done with these 2.5 years? What have you done with all these character assassinations? And what have you found? Because I guess our representatives that we elected would ask that, but they're not doing it.
Well, the Republicans are, God bless them. Trey Gowdy did Congressman Nunes did. Now you're seeing it over in the Senate. You're going to see Senator Graham do it. We need to hold these people accountable. And what's interesting is every one of these top people in all of these agencies that I just rattled off no longer work for the federal government, except for Rod Rosenstein, and he's supposedly going out the door here in a couple of weeks. Every one of them has had to be resign or was fired or was forced out of office. And the more evidence that's coming out against each and every one of them is mounting up to, I believe, criminal activity. And hopefully we will see the Justice Department, now that we have an attorney general that has been confirmed and is supporting the president, is not taking himself out of the investigation.
Right.
We will see a true investigation of what actually happened, and hopefully we'll see people be indicted for what happened during the 2016 elections.
William Barr starting his tenure. We'll see if there are any ramifications for this long, drawn out, as Trump calls it, witch hunt. And is Nancy Pelosi losing control of her Democrats? We're back with Senator Harvey after this. Talking to Senator Ted Harvey about some of the political headlines of the day, including President Trump offering a new budget for the upcoming fiscal year, doubling down on his wish for border security, which we voted him in for. And also, we talked about the Mueller investigation. Senator Harvey, when's that thing going to end, you think?
Well, if you believe CNN, because they have access to all of the leaks coming out of the Mueller investigation, it should be within the next 2 weeks.
Huh. I mean, it's amazing to think there could be an end to this thing, but 2.5 years and all these tens of millions of dollars, right?
Exactly. It should have been over a long time ago. You're exactly right. They're wasting millions and millions of American taxpayers' dollars for purely a witch hunt, and everybody knows there's nothing there. And then you see Congress continuing this facade to try to continue to investigate the president, all of his friends, all of his family member, and continue this on for another 2 years going into the 2020 election. That's all they have to give to the American people. They can't win on the issues. They have nothing to bring forward other than socialism and these whack job congressmen that seem to be leading the party despite the Speaker of the House effort to try to keep them in line. That's all they've got, is we're going to impeach this individual. I'm not going to quote what they called him. And they don't have any evidence of why they want to do this investigation. It's just an investigation of looking for evidence of a crime. It's not an investigation of a crime.
Hmm. And last week, the rage and the trending news was the House passing that anti-hate resolution. 23 GOP voted against it because of various reasons. And, you know, it all came from Ilhan Omar. Which, don't you hate it in school when someone does something bad in class and the whole class gets punished and they don't really say who did it, when really you just should throw the person out in the hall for a timeout?
Well, that was one of the main reasons why a lot of the Republicans didn't support it, because it didn't name her by name. The Democrat leadership in the House of Representatives literally bowed down to this anti-Semite that's in the United States Congress. She's fully able to have whatever opinion that she wants, and her constituents have the ability to hold her accountable. But I think it is incumbent upon the leadership of both parties to stand up and say, no, we are on the side of our number one ally in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East, and we are going to defend them against such scurrilous accusations as has been thrown out on multiple times, not just one time. And the Democrat leadership couldn't bring themselves to do that to one of their own people. And I think it's going to backfire. I think you are going to see the Jewish American population across this country, which tend to vote Democrat year in and year out, I think you're going to start seeing a lot of them start to walk away.
And she unequivocally has made anti-Semitic remarks, not something that could be misconstrued.
You bet. And she's not apologizing for it. She's going straight forward, and she's actually raising money from it and continuing that rhetoric in her fundraising emails. So she's not apologizing for it. And in America, you have the right to do that. She's able to go out there and say and do whatever she wants to do. But she should be held accountable politically in the next election cycle. And I hope that her voters in her district, and I hope the leadership in Congress will hold her accountable now and in the election cycle.
So if this anti-hate resolution specifies nothing, does it mean anything?
No, it means be nice to each other. Give each other hugs. That's all this resolution says. It doesn't hold anybody accountable. She's not being taken off of any committees, which that in and of itself, the most important thing is the committees that she sits on. She's dealing with national security. She's getting all of our nation's secrets about what we're doing in the Middle East. That worries me more than anything. And we should hold Nancy Pelosi accountable for that because she's the one that assigns people to those committees. All of this is just a disaster waiting to happen for the Democrat Party. And, you know, as a partisan, couldn't happen to a better group of people.
We're not even going to get to talk about all the Democrats who are throwing their hats into the ring to go against Trump. 2020 is going to be off the charts, off the chain. And then you've got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her two FEC complaints filed where she said, these are rumors about me. No, they're actually FEC complaints. Is anything going to come of any of that?
Well, I think it will. Those complaints were actually filed by our attorney on behalf of another organization that he's an attorney for. Dan Baker is a very sophisticated election campaign attorney. That's why we hire him. He knows the election law inside and out. And if he is saying that there is a problem with those filings and what they did to try to funnel money to their own organizations, then yes, there is a problem there. And I can imagine that we are going to see the FEC have to deal with this. But I would tell your listeners not to get too excited, because we are also the organization that found out about the $84 million that the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton campaign was laundering through the DNC during the Clinton campaign and to the 2016 campaign. We put that complaint before the FEC over a year ago, and they have yet to make a ruling on that. We sued them, and now we're in front of the court, and the judge has yet to make a ruling on that. So these kind of complaints, though they are legitimate without a doubt, the FEC tends to drag their feet when it comes to a partisan issue dealing with a Democrat for some reason.
Boy, just nothing ever sticks to the Clintons. And then also Ocasio-Cortez made some crazy Twitter remarks last week that the U.S. should not have retaliated against the perpetrators of 9/11.
What does that tell you about the Democrat Party? The American people were attacked on 9/11. Over 3,000 American citizens were attacked on 9/11. And now we have a woman from New York, of all people, should understand how devastating that was to the New Yorkers. She is citing on behalf of our enemy rather than citing on behalf of the families that lost 3,000 people in New York that day.
About a minute, but I want to ask you, too. At the beginning, we thought that perhaps Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker of the House, just was refraining from sort of reeling these people in. Now, I don't think she can. I think she can't do it at all. That's why she's not.
I think you're exactly right. I think she's holding on to her speakership by her fingertips. And that is why she is so adamantly against funding the wall, because the whack job left in the Democrat Party control the House of Representatives. And they told her straight up, we will not vote for you if you give him one penny towards the wall. And that is why she has been pushing Schumer not to fund the wall. That's why she is not going after the left in this situation when they're attacking our number one ally in the Middle East, Israel, and while they're saying we shouldn't be defending American citizens after 9/11. Nancy Pelosi cannot go after them. She cannot rebuke them. She cannot bring up a resolution that names them by name. Because if she were to do that, she would lose the votes for her speakership.
Okay, got to run. Committee to Defend the President to support Ted. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. it's been good to have you along for the hour. We invite you to find us on our websites, U2America.com and also the Biz Talk Radio one. But look, check out this, U2America.com. You can click through and find us. There's a Twitter feed. It's just a simple click and get through and you can friend us and we can connect on social media, all the platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And then And then you can find our podcast on Biz Talk Radio, our previous shows on U2America, some of our other programming, Positively Paula. And so we invite you to come be even more of a part of the U2America family and America Trends. I'd like to thank our guest for tonight, too. We had Kristen Sunata Walker from the Mental Health News Radio Network. She is one of the podcast hosts, one of like dozens, and the CEO of it all. And they cover just a multitude of topics. Tonight we talked about suicide, helping teens with depression, how Generation Z has a bit more depression than previous generations, even though substance use is down. We also talked about art therapy. Senator Ted Harvey of the Committee to Defend the President was on. If you can support that PAC, if that's something you'd like to do, you can go on his website and support. We talked about the political headlines of the day. Nancy Pelosi, is she losing control of her house? And President Trump's newly revealed fiscal budget for the new fiscal year. So always a pleasure to have both of them on. They are a great part of this show. Finally tonight, if you are a theater buff, you probably know the names Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. Bob Fosse, well, both famous dancers, but Bob Fosse, one of the most legendary choreographers in all of American history, all world history, in fact. His leading lady was Gwen Verdon. They were married for a time. FX has a new limited series coming about them, their art and their love. Premieres April 9th, and we're going to show you your first look right now.
Was a fine affair.
Why are you wearing all this makeup?
She used to be a society girl, but then she met the wrong man.
You are gonna love Bobby.
No, I know who he is. He's the one with the hats.
He does a lot more than hats.
He's only choreographed one show.
Slaps the shoulders.
Slaps. I don't think I've ever heard that word from a choreographer before.
You don't want to give anything away. Let him come to you.
Everyone see what Gwen's doing with the arms?
Break the legs.
Or this? Now what?
I don't know.
Listen, it'd be great to get you here. Maybe get your eyes and some of the numbers.
Am I going to be unhappy when I get there?
Of course not. Yeah. What about this?
So what do I wear underneath?
How about,
nothing underneath. Something's off.
Cut his leg.
That's it.
Maybe it's not so terrible.
I screwed up, okay? I know that. I couldn't think without you. You understand? I want to come home. I'm in love with her. Come on.
That's what we do, though, isn't it? We take what hurts and we turn it into a big gag. And we're singing and we're dancing. And the audience, they're yucking it up. They're laughing so hard. They don't realize that all they're laughing at is a person in agony, a person who's peeled off his own skin.
Where's that smile, Bobby?
The only thing I want to do is be with you.
I love you.